Russia says a foreign military intervention in Syria is doomed to fail, as the UN confirms chemical weapons have been used in Syria, though it cannot point to the perpetrator. Many are asking, will the US and its European and regional allies decide to get involved militarily? How will Russia's promised missile delivery affect the regional balance of power? This is the debate.
I want to stress that any efforts to influence the situation in Syria through direct military intervention is doomed to fail and will entail inevitable hard humanitarian consequences.
This is the latest warning by Russia against foreign military intervention in Syria, which has been plagued by crisis for more than 2 years. The Russian president was speaking to reporters after meeting with EU leaders. He said foreign military intervention would only worsen the situation in Syria. Putin also criticized the European Union's decision to lift a weapons embargo on insurgents fighting the Syrian government. He said the EU move, pushed by Britain and France, is against international law. Russia, along with countries like China and Iran, has maintained that diplomacy is the only way out of the crisis in Syria. However, the U.S.-led Western countries have taken a different approach, receiving support from their regional allies, Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, in maintaining their stance. The West and its allies say Syrian President Bashar Assad must resign in order for the crisis to end. They're strongly backing the Syrian opposition groups, funding and arming insurgents fighting the government. However, the West's support for militants appears not to have helped it achieve its goals, as the Syrian army has gained the upper hand in its battles against the insurgents over the past few months. Critics of the West's policy say its support for the armed insurgency has triggered the crisis in Syria, taking a toll on civilians and spilling over into neighboring countries. The West and its allies are also accused of blocking diplomatic efforts to bring an end to the crisis. For instance, they've neglected agreements reached at an international conference held in Geneva last year, which called for a peaceful solution to the Syrian crisis. Instead, they've enhanced support for insurgents, even providing them with heavy weaponry. Observers say the U.S., as well as its Western and regional allies, are seeking excuses to prepare the ground for a military intervention in Syria to achieve a greater goal, regime change. They argue that the West and its allies want an end to Assad's government because it doesn't serve their interests in the region.
You're watching The Debate. Joining me now live from London is Mr. Sharif Hikmat Nashashibi, chairman of Arab Media Watch. I'd also like to welcome our guest in Baltimore, Lawrence Freeman, with the Executive Intelligence Review. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on this edition of The Debate. My first question to our guest in London, Mr. Nashashibi, do you think the West and its regional allies are pushing now for foreign military intervention in Syria?
I don't see any sign that that's going to happen. I mean, what kind of military intervention are we talking about? If you're talking about boots on the ground, there is absolutely no talk of that whatsoever. There is no imminent or concrete plan for a no-fly zone over Syria. So I don't see any sign that the West is preparing for this. On the contrary, you have the Syrian opposition lamenting the fact that there isn't enough support for their cause from these countries. So I certainly don't see any prospect of direct military intervention at all.
Let's go to Lawrence Freeman on this as well. Mr. Freeman, we are seeing Russia warning very seriously today against a foreign military intervention after a meeting with the EU. Do you think, first of all, the EU decision to lift the weapons embargo on the insurgents could be a prelude for foreign military intervention, or do you agree with our guest in London that the foreign military option is not on the table now?
I think a direct foreign military intervention with boots on the ground from the West is not what's immediately at stake. What's happened is that for a period of years, billions of dollars have been funneled from Qatar and Saudi Arabia under the watchful eye of the British into supporting these so-called opposition groups, which are very much connected to the Al-Qaeda networks that we've been fighting in other places, including most recently in Libya. However, the funding of these groups, now the lifting of the arms embargo, the lifting of bank accounts from any kind of sanctions, this is going to be an escalated military campaign of support of the Al-Qaeda opposition groups to overthrow the government of Assad. And now, whether this will lead to further military intervention, we don't know for sure, but we do know this will cause extreme chaos and destabilization in Lebanon. It will flow over into Iraq. Israel has already militarily intervened into Syria. So this is a very dangerous situation, the least of which will happen will be chaos and destabilization, but more fearful, there could be an escalation to war between the West and Russia and China. And that should worry us all.
Okay. Now, you referred there at the beginning of the issue of the arms that insurgents in Syria are getting. I'd like to put that question to Mr. Nashashibi in London. Now, Mr. Nashashibi, first of all, we do know that the EU has been under a lot of criticism for lifting the arms embargo on the insurgents. And even the UN Commission in a report has warned that the transfer of arms would heighten the risk of rights violations, leading to, quote, more civilian deaths and injuries. They had in their report saying that there is a human cost to the increased availability of weapons. So why do you think this decision was made initially to allow for the insurgents to be armed even more freely than they already are being armed?
Well, I think the fact that the decision came with a caveat that there would be no arms actually sent until I think it was August 1st at the date that they sent for review, and I think this was a way of pressuring the Assad regime at the forthcoming Geneva talks, which we don't even know if they're actually going to happen. But listen, I am against the militarization of the conflict in general, but in any conflict, it is illogical to expect that one side of the conflict is supplied and armed, and the other side would not want the same supply and arms. This is just simply illogical. We cannot ignore the fact that the Assad regime is being armed and supplied and financed by powers outside of Syria, Iran, Russia, Hezbollah. They are involved, and we can't ignore that. And as long as one side is armed, the other side will want to be armed as well. The answer should be that the arms flow into Syria should stop completely. Not have this lopsided situation where one side is armed and the other is not. This is illogical in any conflict.
So what you raise there, I'd like to put that question to Mr. Freeman now in Baltimore. Mr. Freeman, I guess they're saying it's illogical to expect one side to be supplied with weapons and the other side not to have that demand, and that the flow of arms should stop on both sides before this conflict can come to an end. What's your opinion about that?
That's not an irrelevant point. The fact of the matter is, what's the policy? The policy is regime change. This is Tony Blair, the former prime minister who's one of the worst creatures to walk the planet. And he has convinced President Obama and others of this regime change policy, which they overthrew President Gaddafi in Libya, which has been the major factor for destruction throughout the Sahel and West Africa, in Mali, in Niger, in Algeria, and Nigeria. And now they have the same regime change policy. There is a government in Syria. The government has agreed to go to discussions in Geneva. The opposition is not a legitimate opposition. It is connected to al-Nusra, to al-Qaeda-linked operations, which were funded out of Benghazi, which may have been why the ambassador was killed. And therefore, this is not a question of fairness. The Russians are supplying anti-aircraft weapons, which are not going to be used against the opposition because the opposition doesn't have planes. And the Israelis are now pushing that as a red line, which means we could be in war between the major powers of the world.
Okay.
And that's a danger that the fools in Washington and Britain and France are pushing.
Okay, I will put this question regarding what you said to our guest in London. But before that, I'd like to give our viewers a chance to take a look at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page about this program.
This time, Russia will not allow the West to destroy another one of its allies. The Russian stance has prevented the West so far from repeating the scenario in Iraq or Libya. At least there's a world power that can stop the West using the UN to launch a new war in the name of peace and stability, while the wars have undermined world peace. Russia and the West are both fanning the flames in Syria by arming both sides. The Syrian people are paying the price and violence is spilling over in the region. Russia and the West will sell more arms and add more tension to the Middle East. Russia is giving arms to Syria as a sovereign state in terms of contracts. The West is giving arms to insurgents to bring about regime change in Syria, not for the sake of democracy or human rights, but to eliminate an anti-West regime. Otherwise, the West would have to start with Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Comments there posted by some of our viewers on our Facebook page. I'll go straight to London, I guess, there. Now, before I start to discuss the issue of how this is going to end, I'll just like to give our guest, Mr. Nashashibi, a chance to respond to what was said there earlier on by our guest in Baltimore. Mr. Nashashibi, Mr. Freeman was telling us earlier that you can't say the opposition right now in Syria is a legitimate opposition because of the fact that it involves terrorists and elements from Al-Qaeda. And the thing is, when we do have the West seeking regime change and a policy of regime change in Syria, as our comments there on our Facebook page were saying, we cannot trust the West's support. It's not being seen as a sincere effort to help the conflict in Syria. What's your response to that?
Look, there's no doubt there are extremist elements within the Syrian opposition, which, I mean, the opposition is a myriad range of groups. And there are extremist elements, and there are, for instance, al-Nusra is allied to al-Qaeda. Most of the rest of the opposition condemned this pledge of allegiance to al-Qaeda. It is a disservice to your viewers that the other guest would say that the opposition, tarring the entire opposition with the brush, that they are all al-Qaeda-linked extremists. This is simply not the case. There are elements that are, unfortunately, but the rest are not. And you can't justify Russian and Iranian and Hezbollah support for the Syrian government on the basis that it is a government and they are fighting insurgents. If you stick to that logic, then your other guest is in America. America has supplied governments throughout the world, in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia. They have supplied governments to suppress their own people. In the Middle East, including Israel and including the Shah. This is no excuse. You cannot say that, oh, well, because it's a government, they are allowed to commit atrocities. They are not. And if you look at history, the worst atrocities and the worst injustices have primarily been carried out by governments. There is no excuse for governments to carry out atrocities, and neither are there should be excuse for rebels to carry out atrocities. But we can't just say that this is happening on one side or the other. The fact that it's a government is of complete irrelevance. Yes. It is a government that is suppressing its own people, and no government should be allowed to do that or receive foreign help to do that.
Yes, Mr. Freeman, would you like to respond to that?
As I said earlier, the United States has many bad problems. And one of them is that this current president is acting like a puppet of Tony Blair and the British, who are the actual initiators of this policy to overthrow nation states, going back to the Treaty of Westphalia of 1648. So they're concerned from the West. They don't care about human rights. They don't care about what happens to the Syrian people. They want to see Syria government overthrown. They want to see more chaos. They want to see more breakup of countries in the area. This is what the Saudis drool about, so they can have greater control.
Well, Mr. Freeman, if I could just jump in here. You said earlier on that you don't think that what they want in Syria right now, they are thinking about a direct military involvement. We are seeing, for instance, the NATO Patriot missiles in Turkey, in Jordan. With these involved, yes. What do you think these efforts are about? Are they not about, for instance, looking for that opportunity to impose a no-fly zone or to get some kind of military intervention, getting involved in some kind of military intervention?
Yes, that is what they're being prepared for, is a no-fly zone. They're going to try to keep away, as they did in Libya from the U.S. side, of any boots on the ground. But in fact, you're absolutely right. They are looking for a no-fly zone. The best news that anybody can point to in the United States is that the military itself, much more than Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel, Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and others, have been very strong in opposition to backing the Al-Qaeda-linked rebels. They've been very strong in opposition to a no-fly zone.
Yes.
Our former Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, made this very clear 3 weeks ago. We should not have gone into Libya. We should not support an overthrow in Syria. So the military institution right now is the most patriotic institution we see in opposing an expansion of this war. However, Obama is not all there, and neither are some of our senators like John McCain, and they could override him, and we're going to have chaos and war if they do.
Okay. Now, Mr. Nashashibi, we have heard President Obama say time and time again that there are red lines here, and if the United States does see that its red lines are breached, that it's going to take further action. And we know that part of that red line includes the use of chemical weapons. We have the UN report on that. Do you think that when Obama says a red line is involved and we're going to take action, that means military direct intervention?
Well, he's been very vague about this, and I think he's been very vague on purpose because he doesn't want to commit himself to a specific course of action. Look, you know, I don't trust the intentions of the US or Tony Blair any more than your other guest. But if we look at the Arab Spring, the wider Arab Spring in the region, the countries, for instance, Egypt and Tunisia, where the crackdown was not as brutal and where the leaders stepped down relatively quickly, there was no foreign intervention because the people didn't need it. In Libya and Syria, you had a situation where dictators cracked down ruthlessly on the people and on the opposition, and that is what necessitated the militarization and the foreign involvement of these people. If the dictators did not cling ruthlessly to power, there would have been no need. So in fact, as much as I'm also against foreign involvement, Bashar Assad basically made sure that there would be foreign involvement. And of course, foreigners don't give a damn about Syria, whether on the government side or the opposition.
So you think the situation in Libya and Syria are the same? You're saying that in Libya what happened, it's the same situation now in Syria? Because a lot of observers are saying that the terrorist groups involved here, that the fact that Israel is getting involved here, the fact that we are seeing regional spillovers makes the situation very much different.
The similarity between Libya and Syria is that if the leaders had not cracked down the way they did and clung to power the way they did, there would have been no need or action for foreign intervention. Just as in Tunisia and Egypt, there was no need. It never happened because the leaders stepped down. They didn't crack down in the same way as in Libya and Syria. So there was no need. And no one wants foreign intervention. But if someone is going to cling to power at any cost, then that's going to happen. So yes. Bashar Assad has himself to blame for this.
Okay, Mr. Freeman, we had Vladimir Putin saying in reports today that we don't want to throw the region off balance. That's his quote. And he means by sending the missiles as of yet to Syria, the S-300s. Do you think that if a foreign intervention does take place or is being prepared, that Russia is going to try and balance it off through its weapons? And do you think that it will prevent a military intervention?
My understanding of President Putin and other nationalists in Russia is that they basically got taken, manipulated, if you will, by what happened in Libya. Because Libya was not about a crackdown. Gaddafi, in fact, was in a battle with al-Qaeda in eastern Libya and Benghazi. And the Islamic Liberation Group of Libya was fighting him for takeover going back to the 90s. NATO supplied an air force to Gaddafi's enemies, al-Qaeda. Now, President Obama and others have made very clear that whatever happens in Syria, the president, Assad, must go. That already tells you this is not a sincere effort, even despite the fact that Kerry is trying to have a conference. The Russians will not, I don't think, allow a second regime change policy by the West, because they know if that occurs, that they will be the next target. In fact, they're already the real target, because as you see the entire Western European financial system collapsing, there's a desire by a certain financial oligarchy to move into other areas, and Russia will come under threats and pressure. If they submit in Syria, then they will be forced to submit elsewhere, which I don't think they're going to do. This is a battle between the superpowers right now. We could be weeks or days away from nuclear war if this insanity by the West continues. This is much, much bigger than Syria.
Okay, Mr. Nashashibi, now you said earlier on that the situation in Syria is a result of the government crackdown, and now the way forward, according to what I understand from what you say, is for Assad to go. Is that correct?
I'm against any dictatorship. I mean, whether in Syria or the region as a whole or worldwide, I'm against dictatorship. What your guest should answer is, if there was no foreign involvement in Syria, would he support the revolution? Because if not, basically, he is just supporting the maintenance of dictatorship.
You see, the major concern about Syria right now, if I just jump in here, Mr. Nashashibi, we have this report by the United Nations, I'll just quote for you, saying there's a dangerous state of fragmentation and disintegration of authority prevailing in areas under the control of the armed groups. And it is referring to the danger of a Syria without government control. What's concerning a lot of observers is that those who are right now in Syria, if Assad does go, or if they are left to control the country, they cannot, because no unity exists between them.
Look, we can't cherry pick the UN report. That UN report also says that the abuses committed by the rebels do not match the scale and intensity of those committed by the government. And again, we come back to the problem that Bashar Assad has allowed the disintegration of the country by clinging on to power. And the only way forward, unless Syria is going to plunge even further, even after he falls, is for a diplomatic solution. But that will not happen as long as one side is armed and expects the other side not to be armed. You can't talk about Russia wanting peace in Syria without them also supplying the regime and expecting that this is going to bring about peace. This is not going to happen. You can't have Hezbollah fighting in Syria for the government, and the government's, you know, lamenting the fact that there are foreign fighters in Syria. Well, yes, they are. They're also fighting for the government. This is no way to peace. I'm sorry. We have to drop the hypocrisy and find a diplomatic solution that is not based on this kind of biased notion that only one side has the right to defend itself and the other doesn't.
Okay, Mr. Freeman, how do you think a diplomatic solution can come about?
Well, I think Senator Kerry, now Assistant Secretary of State, put forward an idea for a new conference at Geneva II this month. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think that's at least the right direction to go. However, if you have the President of the United States and the President of France and others saying in advance, before the conference takes place, that this has to lead to the removal of President Bashar Assad, who's still the only elected leader in Syria, if the preconditions are his removal, then what a farce, what a joke it is. And that's the point I'm making. This is not a Syrian internal problem. This is a war by the West, led by the British geopolitical mentality of Tony Blair to crush opposition throughout the rest of the world by frightening them, scaring them, and forcing them to submit. And the Russians won't submit. And you have to look beyond the problem internally, because the problem internally came from the outside, not inside.
Mr. Lawrence Freeman with the Executive Intelligence Review speaking with us there live from Baltimore. Thank you very much. We've run out of time. A big thank you to our guest in London as well, Mr. Sharif Hikmat Nashashibi, Chairman of Arab Media Watch. Thank you very much for being with us on another edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lezgi. Until our next program, it's goodbye.